Hey veterans, one quick note before today's show. I'd love to know how I can better support you in the veteran community. If you have any suggestions, it could be a guest or a guest type you'd like interviewed, it could be a particular challenge you're facing that doesn't currently have a good solution, or it could even be data you'd love to be investigated. Whatever it is, drop me a line at beyondtheuniform.io or on email at justin@beyondtheuniform.io, and I'll do my best to help out. Thanks and enjoy the show. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today is episode number 73 with Sarah Trevino.
You know, it's kind of scary when you get out because all of a sudden, everything about your career is dependent upon you. You're in the driver's seat now. You don't have HRC, the Pentagon, to call to ask where you're going next. Where you're going next is where you decide to drive that car. And so while it might seem like a lot of weight on your shoulders and something that's a little bit scary, it's also super exciting because it means that you can take yourself wherever you want to go, and it's not up to anybody else.
The top three reasons to listen to today's show are, number one, firecracker. Sarah is awesome. She is exceptionally efficient in her advice. The ratio of quality advice per sentence is extremely high, and I think she's spot on in her perspective on the pros and cons of recruiters, remote working, education on active duty, and more. Number two, process improvements. Sarah found her first job in process improvements, which led her to consulting and then LinkedIn. She fell in love with this field, and it's a great career option many vets could consider. More than just an overview of the role, Sarah's passion for it comes through loud and clear in this interview. Number three, LinkedIn. Sarah works there and has great advice on how to use LinkedIn and other great resources for helping veterans in their civilian career. And speaking of resources, as always at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes for this episode with links to everything we discuss and an overwhelming list of resources that will help you in your civilian career. You'll also be able to get a free audiobook of your choosing from audible.com. Check it out. So with that, let's dive into my interview with Sarah Trevino. Well, joining me today in New York is Sarah Trevino.
You got that right.
All right, I did. I was hesitant on that. Well, welcome to Beyond the Uniform, and thank you for joining me, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited about this.
So quick background for listeners. Sarah works over at LinkedIn, where she is the senior manager, the head of media account management for the Americas. She started out back at West Point, after which she served in the Army for 5 years as a company commander and assistant battalion operations officer. While on active duty, she obtained her master's in human relations from the University of Oklahoma. And after her transition from the Army, she worked at Asurion in customer experience positions before moving on to Accenture for consulting. She then moved to LinkedIn, where she has worked for the last 3 years. And so, Sarah, I always like to start out by asking you, at what point did you know you were going to leave the Army, and how did you approach that decision?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was a mouthful, hearing all of that. There have been a couple of things that I've done since the Army. I got out in 2009 after my five-year commitment had been fulfilled upon graduation from West Point. And I have to say, it wasn't an easy decision. It wasn't something that I knew all along. And that I had this grand plan of what I was going to be doing next. That was certainly not the case. I was fortunate enough to be stationed in Naples, Italy, believe it or not. We have a base there, a NATO base, in early 2006. And long story short, I met and married a fantastic man who I'm still married to, Gaetano Trevino, hence the crazy Italian last name. And we started a family and we're living there. I was there as a company commander for nearly 3.5 years. And that really drove a lot of that decision to ultimately get out of the military, was that I knew I had a spouse, that I would be moving to America, the first time living in the States, needing to, you know, really set his, you know, get his own foundation and roots in a new country. And we also had a small child, my son Giovanni, who's now 8, but was a baby at the time. So a lot of that had to do with my ultimate decision to exit active duty. It was really just about what I thought would be best for my family and giving us some stability in a new country together.
You obtained your master's while on active duty. I'm just wondering if you have any advice to veterans pursuing any form of education while on active duty.
Yes. Well, I'm sure this same advice has been given to them over and over, but the more you hear it, maybe the more people will take the advice. But anything that's offered or available or at your fingertips while you're in on active duty or you have benefits through the military, take advantage of that. And that's really where I was when I first moved to Italy, like I said, in early 2006. I was just wandering around the Navy base and happened to land in the education office and saw some flyers for a program through the University of Oklahoma that was offering master's degrees. And I asked the office manager or somebody that was there, you know, well, what are next steps? How much does this cost? What could I do? And they said, well, tuition reimbursement will cover all of this. All you simply need to do is sign up and start taking classes. And in 2 years, by taking weekend classes and I think 1 week per class, you will ultimately get your master's degree. And I thought, well, what better time? I wasn't married, didn't have a family to also worry about. So it was really just me. And I decided to take advantage of that opportunity. And I have to say it was a good decision that I made as a young lieutenant, because I certainly would have a harder time finding the capacity in my schedule today to take advantage of that and, you know, in addition, paying for it out of pocket. So anything that's offered, I would highly encourage anybody to take advantage of, even if you're not sure it'll be something that you necessarily apply to a career that you intend to have after the military, just by virtue of, you know, showing your commitment and motivation to, you know, take secondary and, you know, post-secondary courses. I think that tells a lot to a future employer.
That's great. I think that's so awesome. And it's saves so much time, so much money. It's very efficient. I mean, I went to business school right out of the military, and I think that was the right path for me. But 2 years is a huge opportunity cost. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of money. And so if you're able to compress that, you're already on active duty, knock that out, you go straight into the workforce, that's a significant difference financially in just terms of age and lifestyle and all sorts of things. So I think that's really, really sound advice. And, you know, I was excited to see that you worked at Asurion. It's at Stanford. It's a very well-known company with Jim Ellis and Kevin Tuile, who had kind of led to that success and got to know them and got to know a little bit about Asurion. But I wanted to learn, I'll throw a lot at you here, but I was just wondering about your first job search, what that was like, what you learned, and then how you found landed at Asurion and kind of an overview of what Asurion is for people who aren't familiar with it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a lot. So we'll see how well I am at condensing this. So again, going back to being stationed in Naples, being married to an Italian, having a newborn son, deciding to get out of the military, I was, you know, I wouldn't say I had, you know, my ducks in a row. I didn't know what I needed to do next, other than I needed to support my family, and I really wanted us to move back to America. And so that said, I ended up partnering with a junior military officer headhunter recruiting firm, specifically Cameron Brooks in my case. I was so thankful and you know, pleased with the support and guidance they offered me, because I really had no idea what I needed to do to get into the civilian workforce. Through their guidance and, you know, resume writing assistance, as well as training you up on interview preparation and things like that, I ultimately went to a session they had back in the States where you would interview with, you know, a handful of companies over 2 days, and one of those companies happened to be Asurion. I didn't know anything about Asurion. I didn't know anything about Nashville. I had never lived there. That's where the corporate headquarters is and where we ended up moving. But I realized that this was a company that seemed like it could be a really good fit. After probably two or three interviews, as well as an on-site interview at the Asurion headquarters in Nashville, I thought this is a really cool opportunity. So what I was going to be doing, and what I did do, is lead their Net Promoter Score program. So they call this NPS, and this is a way for companies to measure how satisfied either customers are or employees or candidates, et cetera. And so in this case, this happened to be the customers of Asurion. So what is Asurion? Asurion is an insurance company that actually does white label insurance for mobile devices. through Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, et cetera. If anybody ever has insurance on their mobile device, it's through Assurion. So it's an insurance company. And obviously, they have millions and millions of customers who would then call in and need their insurance claim to be handled. And that's what the company did. And so that's what I was measuring and monitoring. And through the voice of the customer, then I was able to really look at the survey results qualitatively as well as quantitatively, and then offer back to the business process improvement recommendations, things that needed to be changed in on the online portal, through the customer care centers, et cetera. Just really what was working and what wasn't working is what I was able to then offer back to the company and drive those changes. It was amazing. I found out that I have a passion for process improvement and operations, and so through the opportunity that Assurion gave me, I was able to grow in that role and really dip my toes in the water of corporate America. And so I'm so thankful to Cameron Brooks as well as Assurion for giving me that opportunity. I was there for about 3 years. And like I said, Nashville was a new place for us. My husband moved directly from Naples, Italy to Nashville. He loved it. We had a daughter there, and it was just an amazing place to live as a family for the first time coming back from overseas. So grateful for that experience. It was fantastic.
That's great. I mean, I love that. And I wanted to dig in on Cameron Brooks. I haven't had a lot of people on the show who have worked with them. And so I'm wondering if you could just talk about that experience and why you liked working with them and what that was like.
Yeah, so one differentiator, and again, we're going back a handful of years now, so I'm not sure if this is the most up-to-date information, but one differentiator that I found specifically with Cameron Brooks versus a number of the other JMO headhunters is that Cameron Brooks requires their candidates or the, you know, JMOs that they're working with to be open to any location. And so a lot of people that are getting out of the military have a specific location in mind that they would like to settle with their families for whatever reason it might be. I, on the other hand, didn't. We were moving back from Italy, as I've mentioned, and we were open to anything. You know, we said, the world is our oyster. We want to live in America. I need a job. We're not going to necessarily narrow down our opportunities because we're trying to pick somewhere to live. We were open to anything. And so that worked for us. That doesn't work for everybody. And I found that that is, you know, one of the reasons why sometimes junior military officers aren't the best fit for, you know, partnering with Cameron Brooks. But for us, it worked. They helped me. They really just held my hand through the entire process, from preparing the resume, like I mentioned, you know, editing it, helping me figure out how I could translate what I had done in the military to how it could be applicable in the civilian workforce, to all of their interview prep. A lot of it was in person. We went up to Germany to see some of the individuals we worked with at Cameron Brooks while I was in Italy. And then, you know, finally we had the interview session in Austin. It was, I want to say it was a 3 or 4 day affair where a couple of days we prepared for everything, and then it was 2 full days of interviews. I think I had 8 or 9 companies that, you know, I ended up talking to and was really interested in, and had maybe 3 offers by the end of it. So I had, you know, personally a great experience working with them. And again, I think one of those main things that was required of my successful experience was that I was open to living anywhere in the U.S.
I love that. I think that's such a fantastic overview of Cameron Brooks and all the advantages of working with an organization like them. And another thing I really liked is at business school, one of the professors I liked the most had always talked about, like, hey, you've got location, you've got industry of the company you're working for, looking for, and you've got functional role. And you got to prioritize. One of those has to be most important. And so maybe you really want to work in a certain industry, or maybe you want to be in a functional role like operations or sales or general management or something like that. But you can't make all of them the priority. And so what I love is that by doing something that not many people are willing to do, which is say, hey, we're location agnostic, it opens up a world of possibilities where you're able to prioritize industry and functional role in a way that sounds like it landed you a job that you were really passionate about and uncovered this love for process improvement and, you know, set the stage for the rest of your career.
It did. And I love the way you summed that up, because I don't think I've ever considered that. And I can't even say that I was savvy enough to realize that I was prioritizing function and industry, because I was just completely clueless about what I would need to do coming out of the military. But it all worked out, and I couldn't be happier with where I am right now. And I think it was, you know, every stepping stone along the way that got me here eventually.
That's great. That's great. And so what led you to Accenture?
Yeah, so sure enough, I had been at Assurian for going on 3 years, I believe it was, when I received a LinkedIn in-mail message from someone that worked at Accenture. And this individual was hiring for a role that would lead the Net Promoter Score, candidate experience realm for Accenture. And so what that meant was I would be applying my knowledge of this metric, Net Promoter Score, or NPS, to not the customers like I was doing at Assurian, but to the candidates at Accenture. So anyone who is applying for one of the millions of roles that they hire for on an annual basis has an experience which leaves them either with a sweet or sour taste in their mouth about that company, which they could end up either working for or being a competitor of or being a client of. And so really big companies who have lots and lots of open roles know that they're touching and impacting many, many hundreds of thousands of people every year, and they want to make that experience as optimal as possible. And so this was kind of a new world that the talent acquisition industry was looking at in 2012. And so the hiring manager reached out to me, and we spoke about my passion for, you know, understanding and listening to the voice of either the customer or the candidate in this case, and really driving those process improvements based on that voice. And so it was exciting. It was a brand new role that nobody had ever been in at Accenture before, which was also similar to the Assurian role. So I guess you could say I also kind of enjoy forging my own path. So when this opportunity opened up, I was very excited and ultimately took that role.
That's great. And what did I always think it's helpful for listeners to hear just a portrait of what your typical day looked like. And I'm wondering if you could paint that picture of your average day, the sorts of things you did, what sort of hours you worked, if you had to work on weekends, just giving them a more tangible feel of what life was like.
Sure. Yeah, it was a 9-to-5 job generally. I didn't work on weekends. It was not consulting, though Accenture is known in the consulting industry. I wasn't somebody who was traveling around talking to clients. This was more of, you know, internal work that I was doing with their talent acquisition team. I would say this role was the most global compared to what I did at Assurian and even here at LinkedIn, in that my team did span the globe. So while I say it was 9-to-5 generally, there were often times that I had 6 a.m. meetings or 9 or 10 p.m. meetings whenever we were trying to catch either the early morning or evening hours for our colleagues in Asia Pacific. But that was fun. I really enjoyed having, you know, lots of interactions around the globe. So I was talking to regional heads of talent acquisition about the findings on a monthly basis from their NPS results. You know, what were candidates saying? What was the one thing that was upsetting to them? And I don't think it would come as a surprise to many, many companies, being that through that role, the voice of the candidate is always saying that they want to know where they are in the process. So that was something we continuously worked on. So if you apply for a role and you never hear back, or you apply for a role and you talk to a recruiter and then you don't ever hear back, like, that's always something that we were working on at Accenture and every other company that I know is in that space as well. So, you know, having various conversations with the heads of talent acquisition in region, also talking to my counterparts on a technology front. We did things like creating an app for our candidates so they would know on the day of their interview exactly where to go, who to meet with, what the LinkedIn profile looked like, et cetera. So it was very cross-functional in that I was working with talent acquisition, I was working with our technology partners, I was working with our social media team. There was lots of stuff to do and lots of people to interact with, so the days were varied. But yeah, not too much travel, and I was able to work remotely. I worked from home. That always has its pros and cons, but I think at Accenture, many, many people work remotely. So yeah, it was lots of different things, very fun and exciting and always changing.
I love it. And I would love to dig in on that, the pros and cons of remote working. I think that that's becoming, you know, far from the standard, but much more commonplace than it was even 2 years ago. What would you say are people should consider as kind of advantages and disadvantages of that sort of setup?
Yeah, so when I did start working at Accenture, it was new. At Asurion, I went into the office every day. I had about a 30-minute commute. It was very reasonable. But I was excited about the opportunity to work from home. You know, you think about being able to roll out of bed and, you know, put on a shirt. It doesn't even matter if you still have your sweatpants on and, you know, pop on your computer and start going. And so while the commute aspect of things is certainly a pro, I would say a con that's, you know, very meaningful to me, as I've found over time, is that you lose quite a bit of your relationship building that you have in a more typical office setting. And so I found that while I did enjoy the conveniences of not having a commute and being able to do things over video conference, something that I really, really missed in that role and ultimately found at LinkedIn was really just having a community and a family that you're spending, you know, 8, 9, 12 hours a day with, working day in and day out on projects together, having that camaraderie, having fun with them, knowing about their families, bumping into them in the cafeteria, and just knowing people a little more personally is something that I felt I missed whenever I was working remotely and that I found again now that I'm at LinkedIn.
That's great. I mean, that's probably the best pros cons breakdown I've heard. you should be a talking head on CNN. You're very efficient and very good at diving into topics. This is awesome. So what happened with LinkedIn? How did that transition come about?
Yes, well, we just touched on LinkedIn with the transition to Accenture. And while I was there and loving the diversity of that role, I did have some challenges with that remote working that we just talked about. I really missed having relationships and being close to my colleagues. And Accenture is a really large organization, over 250,000 employees. So, you know, there was a little bit of bureaucracy and things that come along with working with such an amazing brand name company like that. And so after about a year, I reevaluated and asked myself what I thought was missing. I was doing very well in the role and liked everyone that I was working with, but I just didn't feel like it was necessarily the one thing that I wanted to go all in on and, you know, try to stay there for years and years. And so building those relationships and finding a smaller company where I could really feel like I had autonomy and that I could make a difference and that I could try things and that there weren't as many levels of hierarchy was something that I really wanted to do. And so I was living in Edgewater, New Jersey, just outside of New York City at the time. And so, you know, there were so many opportunities open to me because it's New York City. I mean, there's so many company headquarters here. And I had never considered LinkedIn, but sure enough, I was on LinkedIn, a place where I wanted to start my job search. And I saw a role open that actually had NPS, Net Promoter Score, as something that I don't even know if it was a requirement. And I think it was like a preferred qualification or something for this manager. And it just so happened to be, it said something about like, we want this manager to have a high Net Promoter Score with their employees and their cross-functional partners. So it wasn't even that relevant to what this role was, but it just so happened to pop up because I had NPS as a keyword on my profile. And so I did a little bit of research about the company. I was very, you know, transparent and open and honest with my manager at the time at Accenture. And he said, hey, you know, I know a lot of people at LinkedIn because that's one of our vendors. I do a lot of work with them as a partner. And if you want me to make an introduction, I'm happy to do so. And he was able to help me get my foot in the door and open up the opportunity to interview for this role. And I think it took, I don't know, 6 or 7 interviews, and I finally landed this gig, which has turned out to be a dream job. I've been on the same team now for going on 4 years. I've been promoted a couple of times. My remit has been expanded. I am able to really flex the muscles that I am so passionate about in process improvement, people management, and a fun new industry, which is media. So it's been amazing. LinkedIn has kind of played a role in all of the jobs that I've had since leaving the military, and I'm just so grateful to be here.
And it seems like a lot of your experience at LinkedIn has been around media account management. How would you explain that role and that sort of work to veterans who might not be familiar with it?
Yeah. Well, I tried to break this one down a couple of times, too, to explain to my parents. So if you're ever on the LinkedIn website or any site for that matter, you probably see ads pop up. Sometimes they might be trying to sell you something, but on LinkedIn, more often than not, they're trying to connect you with a career opportunity that might be a good fit. And so one of the most amazing things is that the advertising team that I work on and that the account managers that I lead who help our clients implement these ad products are related to talent acquisition. And so the ads that my account managers work on are simply placements on our website that look like ads that say jobs you might be interested in or career, you know, come work with us at XYZ company, et cetera. And so we're able to help companies target very specific talent based on the school that they went to, based on the fact that they're a veteran, based on the industry experience they have, et cetera. We have so many targeting facets that other, you know, websites can't even imagine having access to just by virtue of our data and all of the amazing profiles that our members have. So we're able to serve up something that doesn't ask them to buy something, but actually presents them an opportunity for a career change. And I think that's pretty cool. So that's what all of the account managers on my team work on in North America. I have account managers in New York and Chicago and San Francisco. They work with all of our clients who invest in those media products. And when I started, like I said, 3.5 years ago, it was 12 account managers for all of North America. And now we're nearing 40 account managers, and I have 3 managers who lead those teams. And it's amazing.
That's great. I mean, the passion that you have for this really comes through, and I think it's awesome to see how you found a role and type of work that you enjoy, and also found another company. It sounds like you found several companies that you just really enjoyed being at, and really, I imagine that fulfillment that you had at each of your different jobs made you much more effective, because it's so much easier to have a big impact when you actually enjoy what you're doing and love the people you're working with and the work that you're doing.
Definitely.
What is the day-to-day life like for you at LinkedIn?
Yeah, so it is really fun, and I think it all boils down to the people that I work with. They're all amazingly talented, smart, driven, and super fun people on top of that. So it's wonderful. I enjoy and I look forward to coming into work nearly every day. So it starts with waking up in New Jersey and taking my kids to school, and then I catch a train into the city, and I'm usually sitting at my desk around 9:30, and that kicks off my day. I will have, you know, one-on-ones with my managers to find out what's going on with their people. We say that people is our number one priority at LinkedIn, and it really is. That's the number one thing that we care about, is finding out about how our people are doing, what they want to do in their careers next, and helping them get there. So people process is a big deal as well, of course. It's something that I'm passionate about, of course, but it's also something that has been really fun to build out. Like I said, with the team starting out with 12 account managers to now having nearly 40, you can imagine that the scale that we've gone through over the, you know, past 3 years has been really incredible. We've needed to find ways to do things more effectively and efficiently, and really create some standardized processes. So I was the first media account manager, that's a mouthful, at LinkedIn for our team. And so it was one of the things that, you know, my director really was looking for was somebody who could come in here and put a little structure around things. And I think I was able to bring that out through my military experience, and it's something that I still apply today. So as our, you know, products get more complicated, as our offering gets larger, and as we have more and more account managers, it's important to find ways that we can streamline what we're doing and make sure we're still offering an amazing customer experience to all of our clients. So people, first and foremost, process, and then product. I work a lot with our product teams out in California and share feedback around the implementation and the post-sales execution of these media products. You know, how can we make this easier, not only for our media account managers, but also for the clients themselves? So those are the three things that I focus my days around. Of course, I have a manager as well, and so I share up with him everything that we're working on and try to partner on various projects as well across different parts of the business. So lots of different things. I try to wrap up my day around 6 p.m. here in the city, catch a train back to New Jersey, and am reunited with my kids by 7:30, just in time for homework.
That's so awesome. Oh man, that's such a great portrait. And I think that's so helpful for, especially for people on active duty, but also just for other veterans out there thinking about their next move. It's just so helpful to make it tangible and make it understandable of what decoding what a title and a company looks like into that day-to-day action. And it sounds like the variety in your day is enjoyable, and that it just really comes through how much you enjoy where you're at and the people you're working with.
It's true. I don't think this is something that anybody could fake. And it really has to do with the people. Like, just this morning, today, we had, you know, ugly Christmas sweater day as we're nearing the holidays. And we were taking boomerang pictures and being silly and joking around. And just, like, I looked at the pictures. I'm like, these really are, like, people that I consider friends and family, and I enjoy being with them outside of just having our desks near each other. So it's true that they're fun, and they make this job really, really enjoyable.
That's awesome. I'm wondering, Sarah, if there are any resources you would recommend to veterans that have helped you in your career, and that could be it could be books, it could be podcasts, it could be just anything that someone listening to could somehow get access to that helped you in your career and might help them in theirs.
Sure, and this one again is off the cuff. I should have prepared a little better for this one. But the first place my mind goes, of course, is an internal resource that we have that's available to all veterans. So veterans.linkedin.com is a fantastic starting point. It gives you not only access to learning courses on our learning on our LinkedIn Learning site that we recently acquired, lynda.com, but it also gives you free upgrades to your profile as well as a library of resources to help you as you transition. So again, that one's veterans.linkedin.com. I've also really found that and this one will be more applicable to some listeners than others, but I found that expanding my reach and really building my network with my classmates from West Point has been fantastic. So we have, you know, various alumni Facebook groups for our class. We have, you know, just West Point alumni groups that talk about careers and networking. There's also a West Point women's group that I've been very active in. And I think that's so important. You know, it's kind of scary when you get out, because all of a sudden, everything about your career is dependent upon you. You're in the driver's seat now. You don't have HRC at the Pentagon to call to ask where you're going next. Where you're going next is where you decide to drive that car. And so while it might seem like a lot of weight on your shoulders and something that's a little bit scary, it's also super exciting because it means that you can take yourself wherever you want to go, and it's not up to anybody else. And so when you're in that point of time where you feel like, you know, there's a lot of decisions to be made, I don't know which way to turn, you suddenly realize that having this network is just a phenomenal resource. So whether it's asking questions on various groups of alumni or, you know, service members, or even reaching out individually to old classmates who are maybe in an industry that you're excited about or in a location that you know of, I think that's just a wonderful resource in itself. A quick story about that is just this week there was a 2011 grad from West Point who posted on one of our alumni groups, "Hey guys, I'm about to get out. I'm a logistics officer, and I would really like to end up in Nashville. Does anybody have any leads?" And I immediately sent her a message and said, "Okay, I'm gonna private message you something." And I let her know that I had worked in Nashville. I worked at Asurion, and I highly recommended working at that company. It was a wonderful experience that I had there, and that they have a really big logistics center there as well, and that maybe she could find a management role there. So I was able to connect her just yesterday with one of my former colleagues, and we'll see where that ends up. But if it weren't for the network and for her reaching out, that connection might not have been made.
Sarah, you are awesome. I love so much of what you said, and I love that driving car analogy. I think that's so spot on, and I just love the way that in that metaphor you talked about the pros and cons and being able to control your destiny. And that there, you know, yes, there is uncertainty, and yes, there isn't a path like we're used to in the military. That, you know, that downside, the flip side is so much freedom and so much autonomy and so much possibility. And I think you just really articulated that well. And I also love what you're saying about networking, or I think networking is such a forbidden word for the veteran community, but I love that thought of knowing that when you leave the military, you have lost a lot of connection that you don't even know to appreciate right now. And to start establishing those ties, and what's so great right now is there's so many ways to do that online. Through the Facebook alumni groups you talked about, through other Facebook communities that share interests, other veteran groups like that. And I think especially for those listening on active duty, it's so vital to take advantage of that and take action on that now. Start establishing those ties so that when you sever so many ties with your shipmates and your platoon mates and wherever you're at, that you have a little bit at least of that virtual support group. And I think that's great too, that story that you articulated, Sarah, of just how these are how a lot of opportunities and jobs and referrals come about. They come about through serendipity, but the more ties like this that you have, the more serendipity you're going to find. And so I just think that there's a lot of great advice you packed in there.
Awesome. Yeah, I think so as well, and I'd be remiss if I did not mention LinkedIn too. I know I hit on a couple of the Facebook resources, and of course the veterans.linkedin.com site, but just the LinkedIn profile in and of itself, being able to have this virtual collection of all of your network, your shipmates, your platoon mates, as you mentioned, anybody that you have worked with before, people that you went to university with, your professors, your parents, their friends. There are so many people that have knowledge that can ultimately help you that you can quite simply connect with on LinkedIn to expand your horizons and help you make some of those big decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that for my company Storybox and for my personal life, I would say that the hands down, the most valuable free resource that I use is LinkedIn. I am on that, you know, far more than Facebook. And Facebook seems like oftentimes I associate it with kind of a waste of time and kind of brain candy. But LinkedIn is like that without the sugar, without the fat, without the calories. It is like just a burst of resource. And, you know, I work in e-commerce, and we talk a lot about storefronts and how there's online storefronts, and you can purchase Patagonia online and they have their storefront. Your personal storefront is LinkedIn. That is how people. That is the first thing I do. If I'm interacting with anyone in a professional setting, I go to their LinkedIn profile and I want to know what they're about, what they've done, and all of these things. So, obviously Sarah is working there and she has fond feelings for it, but it is I can wholeheartedly agree with that. And it's another thing to get in place, especially before you transition out of the military, start getting that up to speed. And you know, Sarah, I don't know if you know off the top of your head, one thing I do think about is guidance for crafting an effective profile. Do you know if that's on the veterans.linkedin.com site you were mentioning or somewhere where people could look to get a jump start on just how to smartly and efficiently craft that profile?
Sure enough, it is. And that's, you know, one of the questions that I get asked most often from transitioning vets and even, you know, friends and colleagues who are out in the workplace right now is, hey, can you take a look at my profile? And there is fantastic content on that veterans.linkedin.com site that will help you translate your military experience, point you in the right direction, and offer guidance along the way. So, yes, that's definitely there.
Awesome. Well, a couple other questions just in general. I'm wondering, what was one of the biggest surprises, if you can think back to when you first left the military? What's something that you didn't know to expect about civilian life or the civilian workforce that you would want to share with listeners?
Oh, that's a big question. One thing that comes to mind that I try to share with anybody that I'm talking to that's getting out is that you don't have to know everything. You don't have to have all the answers, and you don't need to make it. You're not making a decision necessarily on what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life in that first job that you take out of the military. That was something that I just couldn't get out of my head, or I had never just deliberately considered. In my mind, you know, there was so much riding on this decision. You know, what industry was I going to get in? What location was I going to land in with my family? What function was I going to be doing at a company? And, you know, in my own mind, getting out of the military was like, oh, my gosh, whatever I pick, this is it. This is like the end-all, be-all. This is Sarah as a civilian. You know, this is it. But the one thing that I learned slowly along the way and certainly would have listened to if somebody would have told me is that, again, going back to that being the driver in your own car analogy, is that you can take yourself wherever you want to go. You can dip your toes in the water and join an organization or a specific function or an industry and try it out. And that's part of the beauty of being a civilian and owning your own career. You're not locked in. You're not signing a contract. You don't have an ADSO, additional duty service obligation, or anything by taking that career. It's, you know, in the corporate world, every company, generally speaking, is an at-will employer, meaning that you can stay for as long as you want and they can keep you for as long as you want, but it's really up to you. And so I think that's been amazing as well, and it's just something that I have, you know, grown and learned over time, but it's not something that I knew getting out. While it's certainly an important decision that you make whenever you take your first career, like, don't get inundated in all of the details and thinking that this is the end-all be-all, because you have the ability to go from industry to industry or location to location or function to function over time. Like, these are stepping stones. These are lily pads that are going to take you along this possibly non-linear journey that you're going to take as a civilian. You know, I started out in the insurance industry and then was in the consulting industry, and now I'm in the technology industry. And there are certainly, you know, similar threads throughout the things that I have done and the contributions that I've made at each of these organizations, but they have all been really, really different. And it's just been about me taking control over what I want to do, where I want to do it, and who I want to work for. And that is the absolute beauty in being a civilian. You don't have that capacity whenever you're in the military. Somebody's telling you where to go and what to do and what your next job is. And that's just not the reality in the corporate world. So I have absolutely, you know, been grateful for all of the opportunities that I've had, but I've also kind of made some of those opportunities happen for myself because I realized something might not be a perfect fit. And so I've been able to take action on that and really craft the life and the career that I want.
That's awesome. I think that's so great. Well, second to last question for me. I always keep the last question just to give you room to say anything else. But I guess my last question before I turn things over to you is I wanted to ask you about mistakes, and for two reasons. First, I feel like one trend that's emerged from these interviews is coming from a military environment of extremely high stakes where there's very large consequences for failure, I think we're ingrained as veterans to not want to fail. And so I think it's great to be able to open up about failures. And the second reason is I think that's where the juice for learning comes from. I think that, you know, all of the great things I've learned have come from just colossal screw-ups and things that I've just completely bungled. And so I was wondering if you could share with us one mistake that you've made since you left the Army and what you learned from that.
see if I can come up with something that doesn't make me sound too silly. There have been, you know, there have been so many mistakes that everybody makes, right? And you learn from them. And I'll try to think as I'm talking to one in particular that I could point to. But I would just say, time and time again, like even day to day, whether it's a project that I dedicate myself to and work on for 6 months, I have one in mind right now. I won't go into the details and bore you, but there was a project that I just took by the reins and worked on really, really heavily for nearly 6 months. This was about 2 years ago now. And it was a fantastic learning experience in that we were completely changing a process. We were changing the way media was going to be renewed or resold here at LinkedIn. We were changing our systems. We were changing our tools. We were changing the narrative. And while we ultimately got that change in place and off the ground and running, you know, after about a year, we looked back, myself and a handful of other people, and said, you know, it's just not doing exactly what we hoped it would do. But this is our opportunity to pivot and, you know, take what we learned from that and turn it into an even more holistic solution. And so we were able to look back. We deprecated the previous systems changes, but that following week we had our, you know, our ducks in a row and our stuff lined up that we would be launching something new, even better, something, you know, more meaningful and useful to our sales reps and to our account managers. And we just got that off the ground about 6 weeks ago. So the first part, you know, I would say maybe a mistake just in the fact that it didn't turn out exactly how we had hoped, you know, particularly impacting revenue. But what we were able to do with that was learn from it. And if we had never implemented that in the first place, we wouldn't even have that foundation to build off of. So where we are right now in our processes and the way we're looking at renewing media is much more holistic, and that first like baby step in that direction was helping us gain momentum and tell the story to the business around something that needed to change. So I actually have at my desk, sitting above my desk, a little picture that my son, my 8-year-old second grader, colored for me a couple of weeks ago, and it says, "Mistakes are proof that you're trying." And I think that's so awesome, and I, you know, try to show my team that I have this above my desk too, because we have to just jump in. We have to try stuff. If we feel so stifled, you know, by the response that we're going to get from our leadership, you know, we're just not going to change things and we're not going to get better. So I love the entrepreneurial spirit that we have here at LinkedIn, the autonomy that my leadership gives me and that I try to give to my team, the freedom that we have, and this spirit of acting like an owner and taking risks. In fact, those are two core values that we have here, acting like an owner. So we want people to feel like they own stuff. We want them to make changes when something doesn't feel right. And we actually encourage people to take intelligent risks. We do have that qualifier in there, intelligent, but it's take intelligent risks. So that's the spirit and that's the culture that we have here. And I think it's amazing because I don't feel bad about the, you know, the quote unquote mistake that we made a couple of years ago. In fact, I don't even know if my boss would consider it a mistake. She would consider it amazing improvement and a big change compared to what we had before that. So we try not to look at things as mistakes here. We look at them as proof that you're trying, and we want people to be doing that stuff. We want to be shaking things up, and we want to be doing things better.
That's great. I mean, I love that quote, too. The mistakes are proof that you're trying, and I mean, I often think about it of like the zone of comfort and where I'm comfortable. And then the moment I get out of my comfort zone, the moment I do something that just makes me a little bit nervous, that's a significant amount of growth. And Tony Robbins has a great quote, which is which he maybe stole somewhere else, but I heard it from him. And it was that the success that we experience in life is directly proportional to the amount of uncomfort or discomfort or uncertainty that we can stand, yeah, that we can tolerate. And I think it's so true. And So often in my life, I'm looking for certainty. I'm looking for security. And it's like, no, you got to push past that. You got to push to that point where you're going to fail. I think of it like exercise as well, where you're tearing muscle and it's rebuilding stronger, and you're tearing it again and it's rebuilding. And that failure to me seems like the tearing of the muscle, and it's just so vital. And I think that it's great that in Silicon Valley and like LinkedIn, I love that take intelligent risks. I think it's such a great mantra, and I know that that other organizations will start to adopt that as well. But I think that the Bay Area has done a good job of just establishing a failure-tolerant environment.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Sarah, I always like to end by just turning the tables and just asking for any final words of wisdom. And I know that there's a lot of questions I asked, and I know, more importantly, there's a lot of things I just didn't even know to ask you. And so I'm wondering, knowing that you have an audience of veterans listening to the show, it could be personal or professional, what else would you want to share with them that we haven't covered already?
Sure. I'll share one thing. So this is something that again, I maybe was not witness of to myself in years past, but just recently have come to really embrace and understand that this is something that I brought to the table as a military professional, but it was something that I also need to kind of change and adjust now as a corporate professional. So a handful of months ago, actually this has been going on for a while, my boss was giving me feedback, and she's a really brilliant lady. She's a phenomenal leader, and anything she tells me, I really take to heart, and I want to change, and I want to do better, and I want to double down on the things that she's saying that I'm doing really well. And part of her performance review was, Sarah, you need to start asking more questions. And so for a minute, that caught me off guard. And then I started thinking about it, and I had this conversation with her. I was like, listen, where I was raised was the military, not literally. My parents did not raise me in the military, but by virtue of growing up at West Point and then being in the Army for 5 years, I was taught then at that time, maybe it's different now, but that I needed to do what I was told. Right, there really wasn't room for asking questions and digging in and finding out exactly what the intent was and all of the context, because I was there to make something happen. And so that really resonated with me, because she said, Sarah, you have this amazing ability to get stuff done. And that's also something that we really care about here at LinkedIn, is getting stuff done. It's not about talking through things all the time. It's not about just coming up with cool ideas. It's about making them happen, which goes back to making mistakes, but it's something that we really value here. She said, you are amazing at getting stuff done. When I ask you to do something, you do it. She said, but something you also need to consider is asking more questions. If I ask you to do something, you need to dig in and find out a little bit more about why we're doing it. You need to ask what that context is. You need to ask about that final objective and what it is we're moving towards. She said, don't just take action and do it. And so I had to really come to terms with this and talk to her about the fact that, listen, this has just been a blind spot for me. This is not even anything I considered. I have always been taught that authority and hierarchy, it works one way, and if you're told to do something, you do it, and you make it happen, and you don't ask questions. And that is a really big difference between the military and the corporate working environment that I'm in now. So I am encouraged to ask questions, and I encourage you to ask questions, not only in the military, but also in your corporate gigs, so that you can find out more if you're not already doing so, so that you can contribute and maybe take the whole project down another path or make it even better or build upon the discussions that have already been had. But unless you're asking those questions, that's not, your contributions aren't going to be able to be made. And so that's something that, recently I've been working on a lot, is not just doing, but ask questions before you do, though that seems contrary to what I was taught in the military. But it's something that my eyes are open to now, and that I would, ask other people to think about as well.
That's great. I mean, one of my personal goals right now is just to be more curious. And like the phrase that I tell myself is like, how can I ask a question rather than give an opinion? And I just notice, you know, and it sounds like in your case, it's kind of something I struggle with as well, which is like taking immediate action. I think as veterans, we're so off the charts good at execution and just getting a dramatic amount of stuff done. And I've noticed that tendency as well, where it's like, I mean, someone just points in the direction, I sprint all out before I even wonder or question, like, is this the right thing to do? And yeah, so I think that that's great, that that asking questions mentality or that curiosity mentality. I think it's, you know, I think that comes with age and experience, but it's something I'm working on as well. And I think that's great that you highlighted that.
Cool.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for your time and for your perspective on this. And for listeners, I'll have links in the show notes to everything that Sarah mentioned, especially the LinkedIn resources. But yeah, I really appreciate all the advice for the Beyond the Uniform community.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. This was fun. I really appreciate your time. And I would be more than happy to connect with anybody on LinkedIn or outside of that. So yeah, would love to help the veteran community any way that I can.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Have a great rest of the week and happy holidays.
Surface.
Thanks for listening. Three important notes before you go. First, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook for Beyond the Uniform listeners. I love Audible. I get 3 books a month, and it's a great way to use net, or no extra time, to polish off books while you run, drive, etc. If you go to beyonduniform.io/books, you'll not only find this offer, but you'll also find a list of every single book that has been recommended on this show. One in particular I'd recommend is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. This is a great story of determination and also a glimpse at what startups are really like. That's at beyonduniform.io/books. Second, there are so many great resources out there for veterans, it can be difficult to know all about them. That's why at beyonduniform.io/directory, you'll find a list of every single resource that's been mentioned on the show or that I've been able to find. You can also add your own if you find one I've missed. Lastly, I've put together several different free ebooks that provide data for veterans about their civilian career possibilities. This quantitative information serves as a great complement to the qualitative interviews I do each week. Go to beyonduniform.io, click on resources, and you'll be all set. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.